One thing that's made democracy more fun, or at least more engaging for a whole generation of young people, is that little thing called the internet. Whether it's in Egypt, Tunisia, or more recently Hong Kong, young activists all over the world are using social media to mobilize and demand change. Emily Parker profiles a few of them in a new book called Now I Know Who My Comrades Are. She shared a few stories with Steve Paulson, starting with a young Chinese blogger named Michael Anti.
Yeah, so it's quite interesting because he didn't start out as a young journalist and a political blogger. He actually started out as a loyal believer in the Communist Party of China. And so in 1989, when there were protests all over China, Anti believed the version that he heard on television, which was that these were counter-revolutionary, violent students basically attacking the army. And so in 1999, 10 years after the Tiananmen crackdown, Anti downloaded a newsletter from an overseas dissident website. This was blocked in China, but he was very technologically savvy and found a way to access it and found photos and first-person accounts. And in those moments, when he saw this version of the story that his government had been trying to hide, his whole world came crashing to the ground.
So one of the great virtues, I guess you could say, of the internet is it simply provides information that some governments don't want you to see.
Well, so that's a big part of it. But I think actually what's most transformative about the internet in countries like China is not its ability to promote freedom of speech, but its ability to promote freedom of assembly. So what's most important about Michael Anti's transformation is not just his discovery, it's the fact that on the internet, he found other people who were like him. And in China, the government is very threatened by any kind of physical gathering of critics or any physical gathering of dissidents. So if you don't agree with the government, if you don't agree with the official version of history, you're not going to find a lot of people in the physical world who think like you. But on the internet, Anti found hundreds, thousands, who knows how many people who were kind of in his camp. And that's where the title of my book comes from. I asked Anti, you know, in China where the internet is so censored, why does the internet matter? And he said, because now I know who my comrades are. Now I know that I'm not alone. Hmm. And that was a revolutionary realization for him.
I mean, so this is interesting. I mean, it sounds like from the perspective of the Chinese government, I mean, the big threat is that people will mobilize and get out into the streets and actually protest what the government is doing more than saying critical things about the government on the internet.
That is 100% right. That is absolutely right. And there have been studies of censorship of the Chinese internet that show that the most sensitive messages online in China are not messages that necessarily criticize the government. They're messages that suggest, let's get together, let's form some sort of collective action, let's do something together. The government is so much more worried about collective action than they are worried about freedom of expression. And so what's really important is this idea that thanks to the internet, all these individuals in China are learning that they're not alone. And even if that assembly is only virtual for now, it's still this now I know who my comrades are, that realization is life-changing in China.
Well, I'm wondering how these issues play out in other repressive countries as well. I mean, Cuba, for instance. I mean, you
yes.
have been there, and there is also a certain degree of fear and paranoia about mm-hmm. what you can say. I mean, there, surveillance is common. How does the internet play out over there?
Cuba is obviously quite different from China. You know, China, you're looking at, again, hundreds of millions of internet users. Cuba has a tiny internet penetration rate. Very few Cubans are online, largely because, you know, they don't have internet access at home, and it's very expensive for them to access the internet. And so what the internet does do in Cuba for the few Cubans that actually access it is it's the one place where they feel like they can sort of speak freely. You know, if somebody wants to just go online and talk about the realities that they see outside their window, the internet and blogs is the one place where they can do this. So the Cuban bloggers that I met also said that the internet was transformative for them because it was the one place where they felt free.
Now,
it was
when they're blogging online, I mean, are they being monitored by the government?
They're being monitored pretty much all the time. And what's really interesting about the bloggers that I met in Cuba is that they had kind of come to a point where they said, you know what, I'm going to say what I think and I'm going to speak freely and I don't care if I'm being monitored. It was sort of that feeling where they just decided they didn't care anymore.
Well, you also have some personal experience in sort of dealing with the paranoia that a lot of Cubans
sure.
face. I mean, you write about a time when you were staying with a family there and you started getting questioned about what you were doing there as a journalist.
I think that the paranoia in Cuba is quite abstract, and I found it rather ubiquitous. And one of the phrases that I heard over and over again in Cuba was, you never know who is who. You know, Cuba kind of operates on this network of citizen informers. So it's this idea that anyone could inform on you. It could be your neighbor, it could be the storekeeper, it could be the guy who runs the cafe. You just don't know. And so you kind of fear everyone. But the Cuban bloggers I met actually had decided that they were not going to be crippled by this. And I describe an anecdote with one well-known Cuban blogger. We were in a cafe, and he noticed that two girls at a nearby table were kind of looking at a camera. And he thought that they were subtly aiming the camera at us, that they were taking pictures of us. And now this sounds totally crazy unless you've been to Cuba. and you know, he's a very high-profile blogger. His name is Reynaldo. He's married to, or he's the partner of Yoani Sanchez, who's the most famous blogger in Cuba. So he wasn't crazy, I mean, to think that this might be happening. But what's really interesting about this story is that I think a lot of people in this situation would have said, oh, I think they're taking pictures of us. Maybe we should go. Maybe we should end this meeting. Maybe we should lower our voices. Maybe we should speak differently. Instead, he took out his phone and took a picture of the girls. And he said, if they're taking a picture of me, I'm going to take a picture of them. It's only fair. But I think the point that he was making was that I am not going to be a passive object in a surveillance photo. I'm just not going to do that. I'm going to take this back. And I sort of saw that behavior among a lot of the Cuban bloggers that I met, this sense of empowerment, this sense of I found my voice, I speak freely, people outside the country know who I am, and I just refuse to be crippled by paranoia.
Well, you also write about another country, Russia,
yes.
and how mm-hmm. the internet is reinvigorating activists there. You say that the big problem there is apathy. I mean, there's not many people think the political process matters.
Yes. You know, when I went to Russia to live in 2010, you're exactly right. It was the country was crippled not by fear or isolation, but apathy. There was this sense that, you know, some 85% of Russians believe that they didn't have any effect on their political process. And the internet, just by existing, is not going to change that reality. So Russia actually, until fairly recently, had a pretty free internet, believe it or not. And yet it was not really being used for activism. So I was fascinated by this puzzle. And what's fascinating, though, is that within basically the span of around a year, that reality totally changed. You know, in late 2011, early 2012, Russia saw some of the largest protests since the fall of the Soviet Union, and social media played a pretty large role.
Hmm. Well, you write about one internet activist, Alexei Navalny, who's trying to combat corruption by mobilizing
yes.
people, but through his own version of activism on the internet. Tell us about him.
Navalny was not only trying to combat corruption, that was the thrust of his internet campaigns, he was also trying to combat apathy. And that's what's really fascinating about Navalny. So what Navalny would do is, you know, he was confronted with a population that was basically exhausted. You know, a lot of them were not happy with politics. They didn't feel like they were living in a democracy, but they had no energy to go to street protests. They had really no energy to fight. They just thought nothing is going to change anything here anyway. So what Navalny did was he showed them that through the internet, they could actually achieve incremental changes. So he'd start all these kind of online campaigns and these online collective action campaigns. You know, they could be for crowdsourcing scrutiny over government spending. And by doing that, he showed ordinary Russians that they could make a difference. And it's really funny because here in the U.S., I don't know if you're familiar with this term, but the term slacktivism, you know, which is derisive. It means, you know, one-click activism. You know, I'm willing to support this cause on Facebook, but I will not go out in the streets. Navalny brilliantly used slacktivism to his advantage. He kind of set up these very easy online campaigns for ordinary Russians, kind of showing them that by clicking something from their living rooms, they can make a difference. And the way Navalny phrased it to me, he said, I propose to people the comfortable way of struggle. You know, I'm showing people that they can potentially, you know, get a pothole fixed, achieve some scrutiny over government spending, possibly get an official, a corrupt official fired from the convenience of their living rooms from behind a laptop. You know, and years and years and years of these campaigns, you know, he sort of built up his following and also showed ordinary Russians that they can make a difference. And I think that's one of the reasons why Navalny was able to go from basically a blogger to the most prominent opposition figure in Russia.
Right. So if we step back from these particular cases, do you think the internet is actually creating a new kind of citizen, a more
Yes.
politically engaged citizen?
Yes, I do. And here's where I have to give, you know, the disclaimer that, you know, the internet is a double-edged sword, right? And the internet does not only create, you know, Democrats. The internet can also be used by nationalists and fascists and racists. I mean, I that's important to say, right? But yes, I do think the internet is creating a new kind of citizen, because in the three countries that I observed, China, Cuba, and Russia, over the course of a decade of research and reporting, you know, I observed two main things. One, isolation, fear, and apathy are among the most powerful weapons of authoritarian regimes, right? An isolated, apathetic, and afraid population is just not going to resist. You know, these are psychological impediments that very effectively prevent resistance. The second thing I observed is that thanks to the internet, people are getting over these obstacles. People are getting over their isolation by finding that they are not alone. They are getting over their fear by finding that they have a voice. And they are getting over their apathy by realizing that they can make a difference. And the internet has been pivotal in that transformation. So yes, I think that you are seeing a new kind of citizen who is basically networked, unafraid, and ready for action.
Emily Parker is a digital diplomacy advisor and senior fellow at the New America Foundation. Her new book is Now I Know Who My Comrades Are, Voices from the Internet Underground.